Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am Paul David, your host, CEO of Literal Humans. And I'm joined today by Chloe Coleman, co-founder and CEO of Vouchsafe. Welcome to the pod, Chloe.
Thank you. Hello. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. You're busy. You're working with government. You're mentioning before that fire drills are wiping out whole departments.
Yeah, it just happens. When you've got that many people in a building, they all just got to leave.
It's true. I'm sure they take their time getting back in as well.
You just would though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. We had it the other day where there was a fire drill, but it was like half a fire drill, so half the building left and people went outside very confused. It was a whole traffic jam. It was wild, but
we move.
Well, today, folks, we're talking about making identity verification inclusive. Very hot topic these days with everything from like voter ID laws that are being passed to in the finance space, know your consumer, know your customer checks and things like that. So we're very excited to have Chloe on the pod today. By way of introduction, Vouchsafe is an inclusive identity verification platform that's working to solve the global challenge of ID poverty, identification poverty, through innovative approaches like biometric vouching, which we're going to get into. Lots of new terms for our audience here. Chloe's got an impressive background in user research across multiple government departments, including the Department for Work and Pensions and the Department for Transport, where she gained firsthand experience with the challenges many people face accessing essential services. Since founding Vouchsafe in 2022, Chloe's recently secured $1 million in pre-seed funding. Well done. That's a healthy
pre-seed round.
And you've been certified to the UK Digital Identity and Attributes Trust Framework. That's a mouthful. And partner with the Scottish government through their CivTech program to tackle digital inclusion. How was that for an introduction? Did we cover?
Yeah, that was great.
Nice.
Better than I could have ever done.
Nice. Well, we want you to feel comfortable. We want you to feel well introduced. We want the audience to know you. So hopefully we've done our job there. First question, let's set the scene. Let's talk about the scale and impact of identification, ID poverty, and help our audience really understand and frame for them why it's become such a critical issue in our increasingly digital society.
Yeah, of course. So I'll start with a couple of stats. So worldwide, there are 1.1 billion people who don't have access to ID. And it's actually a UN sustainability development goal. So it's such a huge problem worldwide that the UN are literally focusing on it. When it comes to the UK, there's 11 million people in the UK who don't have a passport or a driving license. A question I often get is, well, why? And there are loads of barriers to getting that kind of ID here. So cost is a big one. Having the right pieces of paper, like birth certificates and proofs of addresses and historical documents, and also just getting through the processes, they're quite difficult to navigate. That means that there are lots of people that just can't get through them, and it disproportionately affects people who are sort of living in through vulnerable circumstances. So, for example, survivors of domestic abuse are much less likely to have their documents because a form of abuse is to destroy them. If you've ever changed your name through marriage or transition or divorce, then you will find it harder to get those documents and to prove who you are. If you're a full-time carer or you're a recent graduate, these are all life circumstances, which mean it will be harder to prove who you are consistently in order to access services. It's becoming more of a problem because sort of for two reasons. The first one is that there's a cost of living crisis that's still happening in the UK. Things are getting more expensive. Wages are not increasing in line with them, with the increase of costs. So things are more expensive, and passports and driving licenses are used to travel abroad and to prove that you can drive a car. Now, in themselves, those documents are expensive, but so is going on holiday abroad and so is having a car. So there's just less money to spend on these things and less need for people to use them for the things they actually do. The other thing is what you just mentioned, like the digitization of services and digital society. So I don't know if you've tried to get into a high street bank branch recently, but it's hard. There's fewer of them and their opening hours are less generous. The first port of call, the first place that you're sent to is an app or a website to prove who you are. Most services will only allow you to use a passport or a driving license. So that barrier is getting taller. And that's that's where Vouchsafe comes in.
Yeah, no, appreciate that background. And yeah, I did briefly have a Barclays account, and then I was like, this is just not worth it. It was just like too cumbersome. It was only because I had to like move some money like to some, I had to cash a check. That's what it was. I had to cash a check, and I could not do that with Wise. It was just so like, I was like, what world am I living in? Want to like dig in a little bit more and talk about like this, you know, lack of access to essential services, which I know you worked on before. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just banking, you know, like healthcare, housing, transportation. Connect the dots for our audience and, you know, help us understand how that lack of identification, you know, results in those outcomes.
Yeah. So you need identification to sort of access all these things. Well, not sort of. You need identification to access all these things. So banking, like you said, know your consumer, know your customer checks. ID is it required for those. Housing, if you want to prove that you have the right to rent or that you, you know, if you've got the savings that you can buy a house, you'll need to prove who you are to do that. What else is there? Right to work. So if you get a job, you have to prove that you have the right to work in the UK. You'll need identification to do that. And healthcare as well is another really interesting one, because there are some services that you can access from particularly the NHS where you don't have to prove who you are. So if you go to A&E, you won't be asked for ID. But lots of doctor's surgeries will not take you on as a patient unless you've got some form of ID. They're supposed to, but in reality, the situation is that, you know, I think because of the pressures that the NHS is under, they want to know who everyone is so that they can then do all of that administration themselves on an app. And in order to get that access, you have to have IDs. You know, there's just a number of places where the barriers are. There's also weird little things like I went on holiday last year in the UK and I had to show my driving license in order to hire a surfboard. So there are things that just don't matter as much, but essentially the big ones, which are like healthcare, banking, housing, and work, you will need ID. And other government essential services as well. So, and this comes with the caveat that when I worked on Universal Credit, those work coaches and people within the Department for Work and Pensions are sort of trying really hard to get people through the door and through that journey so that they can get the benefits that they are entitled to. The ID is a massive hurdle for a lot of people who are trying to claim the benefits that they need and that they're, you know, like I said, they're entitled to.
Yeah.
So yeah, a number of areas where this problem crops up again and again.
And talk to us about increased digitization of services and how that may have likely has made this problem more acute in recent years. I remember being blown away coming to the UK and seeing, you know, like card only shops and stuff like that. Whereas like, you know, in the States, like, we, you know, there's laws in the books that say you can't do that because people who are, you know, unhoused and unbanked, like they yeah. need to use cash. And I was blown away by that. So talk to me about that, yeah. Digitization, how that's had an impact.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's a really good point about like cashless society. I think that's another really, really good example of it. Where I'm seeing it the most and where we sort of the company are seeing it the most is in the financial sector. And that comes off the back of, I think the pandemic made it worse. Like branches, financial institution branches, but bank branches in particular weren't open for months really. And I think banks learned that they could do a lot of stuff online. They could push a lot of their customers to perform a lot of actions via an app or via the website. And I don't think we've recovered from that. So traditionally, if you're trying to open a bank account, and I'm talking like, you know, I know that my mum used to work on the tills at NatWest, right? She used to work on the, I can't remember what they're actually called, and people in banking will tell me off for calling them tills, but she used to work at the customer service desk in NatWest. And people would come in to the local branch. They had like two branches of NatWest within 2 miles. And my mum would be like, oh, that's Sally. She cuts my hair. She's cut my hair for 15 years. I know who she is. She can, of course, she can have a bank account. And that was KYC. As people have had access to more and more things and digitization and just the growth of technology, fraud has obviously grown. And we're now in this weird situation where people, branches are closed or have weird opening hours. And people can't just go in to talk to a human being. People can't just turn up and be like, here's this letter from my GP, here's this council tax bill, here's this, or here is somebody from the community that knows me well, you trust them, can I have an account? And that used to happen, and it just can't anymore because nobody had built sort of a secure, risk-lowering way of doing that digitally. So what we've built to sort of counteract what's going on isn't it's not a brand new concept. It's just a brand new way of doing something that we've done in all sorts of sectors where people have had to prove who they are for years. But yeah, it's that like less access to real branches and other human beings and pushing people towards apps and web pages that has sort of caused this divide, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great segue into what exactly you do at Mouthshape. So let's dig into the product and the service that you offer. So want to understand your approach to identity verification, you know, what it entails and what makes it truly inclusive compared to some of the traditional methods that you mentioned. And also want to dig into this concept of biometric vouching and like understand that, just define that for our audience as well.
Yeah, of course. So our approach to verification is that you're verifying people, and people have lots of different needs and they've got lots of different things and they live vastly different lives to one another. And what that means is that you cannot just ask people to reliably, ask people to bring you one of two things, that being a passport or a driving license. So what we do at Vouchsafe is we have developed a platform essentially that allows people to use a whole different range of methods to prove who they are. And our customers, which are mostly financial services, can pick what they're okay with and what they're not okay with. They can combine methods if they really want to. But essentially, Vouchsafe enables people to get access, prove who they are, and go through anti-fraud checks without needing to have a passport or a driving license. If they've got them, great, we can use that. But there are so many other different ways that we can do this as well. And there are so many other different ways we can do this as well. And biometric vouching is one of the methods that we're particularly proud of.
Well, get myself off mute there. Sorry, for your chance to have a drink there. So you want to understand like what was the inspiration behind, you know, biometric vouching and also like, you know, sort of the range of different identification methods that, you know, Vouchsafe accepts beyond just the typical passport and the driver's license, just so like folks can kind of understand the different methods that you're using there.
Yeah. So biometric vouching, I'd love to say that there was like one big eureka moment, but I think like a lot of ideas, this is something that grew over time. So when I was working at, I think actually it started a lot when I was working as a journalist, when you would find sources through other people and the people that would give you the sources would kind of vouch for people, right? They'd be like, this is a trustworthy person, this is someone you can talk to about this thing, you will be able to get this information and maybe a quote. And that was like a way of bringing people's stories into essentially national press and knowing that they were trustworthy. And then I worked as a civil servant. My longest stint was at DWP on Universal Credit, where I would constantly see people bring in basically like entire ring binders of information where they'd be like, well, this is my GP and this is a reference from my last job. And this is somebody, you know, that this person's been my neighbor for 15 years. And they were trying to prove who they were through trusted relationships. And then there was a CivTech challenge and I can't remember the exact wording of the challenge, but this is that challenge, that innovation challenge that we did in partnership with CivTech and the Scottish Government around how people can prove who they are when they don't have the documents that they need. And trusted relationships was a word that we sort of threw around a lot in that accelerator. And that's sort of when it clicked, was like, oh, well, there's ways of doing this. And people have done this throughout time. People have brought letters in from you know, members of the community who are trusted, like religious leaders or doctors or nurses or people employed by public services. People give references for jobs. People like this is something that we rely on as a community and as a society anyway. Heck, you even have to get your passport countersigned by someone in a specific job. Like this is something that we're familiar with. And we sort of had a moment of like, well, why can't we just use that why can't we use that as a way for you to prove who you are? Why does it have to just be used as a way to prove that you're trustworthy for something else or that you are able to get a passport, which is incredibly expensive anyway? Like why can't we just use it in and of itself as a trustworthy method? And that's what we've been building. Yeah.
No, that's great. And then this question, I mean, you can probably predict this question coming in terms of like fraud, right? Like, and I feel like this always gets thrown around and like, you know, in the context of like voter fraud, at least in the US context, it's like people are not rushing to be, you know, like to vote multiple times. And like, you know, so there's a whole thing there, but like there is this attempt to balance, you know, accessibility with security, right? And so how do we maintain, you know, I guess high levels of both, you know, especially with the rise of like AI generated fraud and things like that. So how are you all thinking about that at VouchSafe?
Yeah, I mean, I won't go into the specifics of the security controls that we've put in place because then I'm just giving a cheat sheet, right? But essentially, the first and most important thing I think to say is that we never rely on a vouch alone by itself. We always pair that with different kinds of background checks, and particularly checks to check if it's a synthetic identity or if that identity has been stolen in the past. And then also the referee, the person vouching for you, they have to have an identity document, or they can prove themselves through like an open banking connection. There has to be something. They have to essentially have a different piece of evidence that proves that they are who they say they are. And that we've seen in our research is like, is a huge deterrent. When people are staking something of their own on it, it's a huge deterrent against collusion. And when it comes to AI, I think, you know, we do the liveness check, the enhanced liveness checks, which have been tested, and we've tested, you know, rigorously. They're accredited separately by NIST, but also under the DIATF as well. And pairing that with different methods means that you've got like a wide range of information, and you can kind of judge the risk as a whole, instead of relying on one piece of info. And I think that we're actually seeing that through research that we've done and papers that we're reading, that now it's really easy to just create like a fake driving license on AI, like using, you know, generative AI. And I think that that means that the other methods that we use are going to become better than just scanning a picture of a passport or a driving license. And, you know, Paul, I don't know if you've ever tried to do fraud. It's harder to get, this sounds like I'm speaking from experience, but it's harder to get someone else on board with your fraud than you think it is, from our research. And I think that, yeah, that sort of, that referee really being, you know, when there's a vouch, everybody in that situation is we do background checks and we do multiple checks on, and that really, really makes sure that everybody is who they say they are.
So would you say there's an element of what you do that is kind of fraud prevention or anti-fraud? Like, are you strengthening the protections against fraud in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's particularly pertinent when you're thinking about how sort of referrals are used or vouching is used in the real world at the moment. So there are some bank accounts that you can open by taking in a certain number of bills and a signed letter from a person in a certain profession. But there are no checks that go on that person. Whereas what we're doing is saying, you know, in some cases, some of our financial services customers have decided it has to be a professional referee, meaning that they have to use their work email to do that OTP, and then they have to scan their documents. And that's, you know, way more secure than someone bringing a letter to you. Like, these methods already exist, and what we're doing is we're making them more secure. And throughout time, as we introduce more methodologies that aren't sort of scan or image base, I think this will become like VouchSafe will become even better and even more secure.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, this is a good opportunity to pivot and talk about your growth strategy, because, like, if, you know, it's kind of like, okay, if this is such a no-brainer, like, let, you know, people are going to eat this up, right? They're gonna.
I hope so.
Well, if the pre-seed funding is any indication, that you're on a good track. So you've got this recent, you know, 1 million, you know, pre-seed funding and you know, some certification achievements. So yeah, we'd love to understand like what's next, and kind of how you're differentiating yourself in a competitive market where, as you put it, everybody's competing to be the best KYC provider. So yeah, how are you standing out of the crowd and growing as a result?
Us, it's always about being the people in the platform that people can bring anything to. ID and how ID looks is going to change in the next, I mean, I think it could be in the next 5 years, but definitely in the next 10. You know, we're seeing e-wallets, we're seeing digital ID, we're seeing mobile driving licenses in the UK. It was sort of announced relatively recently. A considerable amount of change that's about to happen. And for us, it's about being ready for that and enabling people, if they do have those forms, to go somewhere and use it, essentially. We have a very different approach, I think, in the sense that we didn't build this from having debates about sort of self-sovereignty or decentralized versus centralized. Obviously, we've had those discussions, but we built this because what we wanted, the challenge that we saw was that what already existed was restrictive to the point that people without those documents were still trustworthy, but they could not get access. So for us, this is all about how we make this safe and secure. Yeah, obviously that's at the heart of it, but actually what's more important is that it works for human beings. It doesn't just work for, you know, for certain technologies. It has to have people at the heart of it. So I think for us, it's about understanding what is going to be next in that ecosystem and how we, you know, how we can accept it, basically. And also, you know, how we can continue to make it more and more secure.
Yeah, I think some of these like conversations about, you know, like things like identity verification and security can get quite heady. And I love how you're like bringing it down to the level of like, you know, one of the best quotes I heard this year when interviewing founders was, you know, the ultimate moat like around your company or product is people loving your product, right? Like no competitor can beat that. You know what I mean? And like, so the fact that you're grounding yourself in this user-centric approach to like rolling out, you know, product developments and updates and just the product in general, I think, you know, bodes very well for your future.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And it's got to work for everyone, right? Sorry.
No, that's okay.
It's got to work for everyone. It's got to work for the users, for the customers that are trying to verify themselves, but it's also got to work for the institutions that use it as well. So that's what I'm really looking forward to getting my teeth into as well.
Yeah, and that's like kind of the elegance of, right, like of great product design, of a great growth strategy, is like you're serving all the stakeholders, you know, at once, and you're figuring out the way to not make, you know, not allow the needs of one to trample over, you know, the sort of accessibility of the other and so on and so forth. So to that point, like, would love to understand what sectors and markets that you're prioritizing, you know, as part of your growth strategy. Take your time.
Yeah. So in terms of market prioritization, we are really heavily focusing on the financial sector at the moment, specifically credit and loans. So we've been doing a lot of work with a number of credit unions who I just think are doing the best work in the financial sector at the moment. Lots of credit unions will see that their members are people who've been turned down by traditional banks, high street banks, traditional finance. And credit unions are like really local financial services that know their customers and know the needs of their customers inside out and are often dealing with people who are in positions in their life where they need access to small loans for quite urgently, but they've got really long relationships with those customers. And they're providing a service that is vital, and they're usually doing it with teams of like 8 people in an office in a city center or on the edges of a city center. And I just feel like the most important work we can do is getting those members access to those credit unions at the moment. So that's why we're focusing on financial services. But we've also been working with a couple of like prepaid credit card, you know, direct to consumer banking app type of companies as well. But yeah, financial services are our focus at the moment, because if you can get a bank account or if you can get something that you can pay money in and out of, that's the first step on the ladder. There's no point getting a job because people, if you don't have a bank account, because people won't pay you in cash. Like that's the first thing.
Yeah, makes sense. One thing that strikes me is like, you know, in the space that you're in, it's about, you know, a big portion of it's about gaining institutional trust. You know, in a field where security concerns are paramount. So we'd love to understand, like, what's been your most effective strategy to do that as part of your larger growth trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, obviously certifications play part of that. And there's a real like technical side to it where we know our numbers are false negatives and false positives and that sort of thing. But in terms of institutional trust, I think you can learn from what's coming, but you can also learn from what people have experienced. And by talking to our customers and talking to people, especially in the financial sector, we can understand what their concerns are, what they've seen before, and show sort of how we currently combat that and talk about how we can combat it further and how we can strengthen. I think for us, it's a combined approach of those certifications and working with organizations like the FCA and you know, audits and penetration tests and all sorts of things that we absolutely must do and are really important for us to do. But on the other side, it's actually genuinely caring about what our customers, those financial services, are experiencing and what they're concerned about, what they've seen before and what they're worried they'll see in the future. And credit unions are like a really good example of this, because they see things on such a local level, and they know their customers so well that it's just a really interesting topic area. So yeah, there's the technical and the certifications, but there's also just listening to and knowing our customers.
Yeah, again.
And genuinely caring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, back to that, like, you know, it sounds so simple, right? But it's sort of like, you know, like getting to your customers, knowing them and caring. Like, those are all three very different, you know, like a lot of times companies, they can't reach their customer, you know, like,
yeah.
they just, then there's like the understanding them. So like processing data and like talking to them and stuff like that. And then there's caring, you know what I mean? And that's like a very high level, you know, I put out a LinkedIn post earlier today about, you know, I went back to the States and I rented a car, and like, talk about like a soulless, you know, machine of like, you show up to the airport, you're tired, you have to drag your like broken body to this counter, and there's a huge line. They don't give a hot damn about you. And like, I just want to get home. I want to get in this car that I've massively overpaid for. I'm paying fees, insurance out the wazoo, gas, everything. And so Turo, they're like Airbnb for car rentals. And, you know, it's all like, rent a car from a local and, you know, skip the rental counter. And I'm just like, yes, Turo, like you get me. Like, you're like, yes, I want to support local, you know, people.
Yeah.
And like, I want to skip the rental counter. And there was another one in there too. I forget what the tagline was, but they just really like showed that they cared. They showed that they knew my pain points and they spoke to them, you know? And I don't rent from rental car companies anymore. I just do car share with Turo. And there's also the human piece of like, I get to interact with the human. I had a lovely guy with this guy, David, lovely chat with this guy, David, on my way out. He's from Jamaica. He's telling me about his family's trip. And it was like way better than just like handing my credit card and ID to ID. There we go. Speaking of ID, you know, and that was another thing too. You have to, I can do it with a debit card, right? I don't need a credit card. And then I'm pulled into this whole credit thing. You know what I mean? So there, I actually didn't realize that connection to what you did, but there we go.
Yeah.
There it is. So.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah. But I remember, like, to your point, I remember stressing because I had to go to Ireland and rent a car, and I don't use credit cards anymore since I left. I've absolved myself of that. And I was like, man, am I going to be able to get a rental? And what, you know, what are the ID requirements, all this stuff? Do I have to pay more because I'm using a debit? So you're really getting in there and, like, you know, addressing some of these issues. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
Yeah. And like, to your point, like high and low, right? Like I'm a relatively, you know, middle class, like I'm fine, right? I'm going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if I'm dealing with it at my level, I run a company, I'm worried about, can I rent a car, all the way down to people who actually are experiencing ID poverty and can't get the basics. You know what I mean? Like, it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely a scale, but we find that we've from all of the people that we've spoken to, there are people that, like, it really is a scale, but people experience it all across at different sort of sizes of need. But yeah, obviously the problem is more acute when you can't access those essential services, but it's still a problem.
Yeah. Want to get into a bit more about your background and your personal journey. You know, I imagine, you know, your background in user research, you've worked across different government departments. I'm sure you've got loads of valuable insights, you know, into these identification hurdles that many, many customers face. Would love to understand how, you know, how deeply that experience has influenced your approach to how you've built VouchSafe. And was there like a specific moment or experience during your government work that kind of crystallized the need for a solution like VouchSafe?
I think for me, it was when it was just after the pandemic. I'd been at DWP for sort of just over a year, I think. And we were finally allowed to go and watch what actually happened in job centers. We were finally allowed to go back in and research those interactions and understand the processes. And I was sat behind a work coach just observing and taking notes on the process of somebody proving who they were to get access to their benefits. And a gentleman came in, and I think he must have been in his 50s. He had not really claimed, I don't think he'd claimed Universal Credit before, because they were taking him through a really long journey first time. And I think I referenced this earlier, but he literally came in with like a a ring binder, like a lever ring binder full of documents. And in that he had his O-level certificate. He had one of his school reports. He had a council tax bill from his old house, but he hadn't got one from his new house. He had some utility bills, but they were like 4 months old, not 3 months old. Like, he had so much stuff in that ring binder. He had like one of his children's birth certificates, but he didn't have what he needed. And of the list of things that you can use to prove who you are to gain access to Universal Credit, he had none of it because it was either out of date or it was just the wrong piece of paper. And they said to him, you know, can you go and get a passport? And he looked at the work coach and he was like, I'm applying for benefits. Like, what money do I have to do that? Like, I don't. And also, like, I can't, I'm, you know, I'm working part-time anyway, and I can't go and get my photo taken in snappy snaps. I can't, like, there's no time, and I don't have the money. And for me, that was a moment where I was like, oh my God, this is a problem. And I thought at that point, this is a problem in government. But obviously, the more we've looked into this and the more research we've done, we've realized that it's a problem in any sector where people need to prove who they are. And I just, like, really, like, viscerally remember this man telling me about how he got on the bus with this ring binder, and he was terrified he was going to leave it on the bus because there was enough information in that binder for someone to do like identity fraud on him, but there wasn't enough information for him to prove who he was. And I was like, wow, this is, somebody has to fix this. And I think for me, that was it.
Yeah, I mean, it's those moments. It was always those moments where, you know, you have like this little inkling into, you're like, wow, like, if this is happening here in this way, you know, with this part, like, this must be a much more massive challenge, a much more massive problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think for me, it was like being the leader of a charity, a nonprofit, and just realizing like how few levers I had to grow, you know, the charity. And that was part of the inception of Little Humans, was like, man, like, people who run tech for good businesses and charities, they deserve way better growth strategy and like, you know, what the big dogs have. And that was, yeah, sort of the seed. It was like, gosh, like, if I just had these tools, you know, to grow, I could make such a bigger impact, and my mission would be achieved way sooner. So appreciate that story there. Thank you for sharing that. Would love to like understand, you know, you've done some research in specific regions. So like, you know, it sounds like you had some standout discoveries into like the nature and texture of digital exclusion, some places like the Gwent region of Wales. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Yeah, but would love to just like hear a bit more about like, you know, what you are seeing and hearing about and discovering on the ground there.
Yeah, there's a real assumption, I think, that made that everybody's got access to a smartphone, and even more so that everybody's got access to a smartphone that works and that has space in it to download apps and that's got a good camera and can read NFC chips, and like, people just make assumptions that everybody has access to this sort of thing. And when I was doing research in Gwent, and this is like, again, quite locally specific, and I think nationally the numbers differ on this, but what I found was that in specific areas of that region of Wales, there were individuals, like, it was much more likely that an older adult would have access to an iPad or an iPhone or even, you know, a Samsung Galaxy, whatever the number was back then it was for a young person growing up, like a younger adult or a young person or a younger adult. So because the cost of living crisis post-pandemic was quite dramatic in these areas, older adults who had paid off their mortgages and bought their houses for $5,000 and were sort of with quite good pensions from their work were able to afford the technology, whereas people who were like raising a young family and maybe working part-time just couldn't afford the technology. And for me, that was really eye-opening. And, you know, 8% of houses in the UK can't afford a mobile. And I think it's about 11% of adults in the UK. I might be wrong on that, but it's in the millions of numbers of adults in the UK don't have access to a phone, a laptop, or a tablet in their home. So when we built VouchSafe, we were like, this has to work on any device. This can't just be something that you download as an app onto your phone and it sticks with your phone, it has to work for everybody. And you have to be able to go and use it in a library, and you have to be able to use it on your mate's phone, and you have to be able to use it on your nan's tablet. Like, you have to be able to do these things. So for us, it was really eye-opening to, you know, you're never going to build a digital solution to a problem that doesn't need a digital device. But what you can do is build it in a way that means that people can go to other places to access it. And for us, that was really important from day one.
Yeah, I appreciate like that integrity, you know, like starting with that integrity from day one and kind of insisting on that. Would love to move us into just kind of final round, lightning round questions, we call them. Yeah, they're just kind of like quick fire questions, you know, a good way for folks to get to know you. So whatever comes to mind initially, keep them short and sweet, just, you know, your first instinct. So you've got one tech startup under your belt. If you could found another one based on what you know today, what would it be and why?
This changes every day, but I'm currently really obsessed with Romance Scam podcast. And I think if I could build something else, it would be like almost like a red flag detector or something where people could essentially find out if the person they were talking to was leading them down the garden path for a romance scam. There's actually a company that do kind of a similar thing called Ask Silver. They're brilliant. And you can like take a picture of you know, if you get like something from the post office saying that you have a parcel or a link in an email, you forward it to their WhatsApp chat bot and it will tell you if it's fraudulent or not. So that's kind of what the back of my mind as well. But yeah, for me, it's a way to prevent a tech that would prevent people from giving their hard-earned life savings to people who are, you know, catfishing them in part of a romantic scam.
Nice one. I feel like if you can get like a red flag detector, you'd cash out. You would just like, you'd be done.
Yeah, right? That would be it.
But is it like, do they need a red flag detector or more of like a, hey, you should act on this red flag?
Yeah, I feel like it's more of like a gentle critic, like a critical friend to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Someone who's going to be like, hey, don't ignore this red flag. And here's five ways you could react to this red flag right now. And you have to pick one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a stop and think.
Well, on that very topic, what is a tech invention that makes you the most excited right now?
This is really hard because I want to give the really obvious answer, which is obviously AI. But I think there are amazing things that people are doing. It is AI. There are amazing things that people are doing with AI at the moment. I can't remember the name of the company, but when I was at Slush last year, there was a French startup that were using AI to analyze results from tests from women to then essentially enable the IVF that they had to be more successful. So it was like personalizing what was used in IVF essentially, so that the chances of success were higher for each individual woman. And I think that's like amazing. Like their tagline was like, we make babies. And I was like, this is amazing. So in many ways, AI, but I think the tech invention of AI makes me excited. But what actually makes me excited is people who are using it to change the world for good.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why we asked this question of, you know, like it's a lead in to like, you know, tech for good and kind of what it's, what it should be used for. So flip side of that question is obviously, what's the tech invention that makes you the most concerned right now?
It's the same thing. It's the same coin. Everybody must say this. I think it's AI. It's generative AI, but it's also generative AI in particular, I think, but also like combined with the political environments that are happening across the world at the moment. I think that is like a perfect storm for people to do really bad things and not care about art and the idea of like unverifiable or even, you know, fake sources or fake imagery being used and that making its way into mainstream or trustworthy news sources, that concerns me. So I think, yeah, for me, it's specifically the like pictorial part of video part of generative AI in that sense. Like,
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Who's a literal human that you want to shout out who's been integral to your career journey?
There's so many. And it would be wrong if I didn't obviously say my co-founder, Jay, who was like my friend at university and we worked on a student newspaper together. And then like 10 years later, 8 years later, we started a company. So I think obviously that's one human, but there are lots of humans and I can't name them all, but I think, yeah, so many. I could just give you a list.
Okay, it's like an awards show speech.
I feel like I've won an Oscar.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, lots of really amazing researchers at DWP in particular as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then any inspirational quotes that have stuck with you during your journey through tech?
Gosh, I don't really know how to answer that one. There probably are, but I think I always just like to go back to Shakespeare. And I think that for me, like coming into the tech world in particular, it's been quite, sometimes you can be the only woman in a room. And the Shakespeare quote of "though she be but little, she is fierce," I think is something that it's probably quite corny, but it's something that I always hold dear to my heart because yeah, sometimes you have to be the first one in the room.
Absolutely. That's a great one. That's a great one. Well, I really appreciate your time today. I think, you know, this episode is fantastic because, you know, I think VouchSafe is tackling an incredibly fundamental issue that doesn't get talked about enough. Like, I wish I heard the phrase ID, you know, identity poverty more often because of how critical it is and how it's all about access to nearly everything in our increasingly digital worlds. You know, it's the technology, as we say, tech can't save us, but technology itself isn't the solution. It's like using it thoughtfully to create these more inclusive systems that work for everyone, regardless of their circumstances. So that's one thing we like to do. Despite our cheeky name, we like to highlight folks who we think are actually saving in the world, making it a better place. So we're really grateful for you joining us today. Chloe, where can folks find out more about VouchSafe and the great work that you're doing and maybe even donate?
Yeah, of course. So we're at vouchsafe.id. We're also on LinkedIn as VouchSafe, and I'm Chloe Coleman, and I'm on LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn or our website. But get in touch if you want to hear more.
Nice. LinkedIn's where the party at these days, apparently, turns out. So all the cool kids are on LinkedIn.
Only social media I do anymore.
Yes, same. I'm done. I'm done with it all. I have my like guilt IG every now and then. I'm like, oh, I gotta get back. And, like some party invite's been sent. I'm like, okay, all right, you know.
But I've got like a 5-minute window on my phone where I'm allowed to use Instagram every day.
Exactly. Yeah, disciplined. Well, but thank you for this, and thank you for what you're doing.
You.
I think that the stories of folks who are being brought into, you know, brought out of identity poverty and into identity inclusion, I suppose, are very inspiring. So, folks, if you're listening, please leave a review for this episode. Give us a 5-star rating so we can keep bringing great guests like Chloe Coleman, co-founder and CEO of VouchSafe, onto the pod. This has been another great episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. We've had Chloe Coleman, co-founder and CEO of VouchSafe, talking about making identity verification inclusive. Thanks so much again for your time, Chloe.
Thanks so much, Paul. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.